Welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Van Buskirk. Each week, Canadian running staff writer Maddie Kelly and I bring you the news, results, and drama from the exciting world of running. This is The Rundown. Hello, listeners. I hope that you're all having a wonderful holiday season, staying healthy and happy. It has been almost a month since we last brought you a rundown, and we're so happy to be bringing you one today. Maddie, hello. How are you? How have your holidays been?
Hi, Kate. They've been great. Well, yeah, they've been great. Like most people, it started with a little COVID scare, as, you know, kind of as the times are going. We navigated through that. So far, no COVID, which very happy about. So it just, you know, due to some isolation, delayed the beginning of the festivities. But they are in full swing now, and it's been lovely. And I had my birthday this week, and I went downhill skiing, which was my first sort of competitive sport. And I hadn't skied in 10 years. And so we went this week to the family I used to race at, or sorry, to the hill I used to race at with my whole family. And it was truly so special. So I am, yeah, I've had a great break, a little bit different than I thought it would look, but overall, super fun.
Great. Glad to hear it. And happy belated birthday. Are you sore from your birthday ski?
No, I'm okay. I was sore day of. Like, my IT bands felt thrashed. Just because you're sort of holding like a quarter squat the whole time. That's just the position that ski boots put you in. And I hadn't done that in, as I mentioned, a decade. So it was a lot day of, but, you know, a little massage gun after, truthfully. And that was quite helpful.
Excellent. Yeah, my holidays have been pretty quiet, as I think most people's have been, you know, just trying to be safe with, again, this ongoing thing we call COVID. I did get a chance to see my immediate family after we all took several rapid tests, and that felt pretty good, pretty safe. Everyone's healthy. Everyone's, you know, managing the best they can. I'd never had this before. I had Christmas chili. My sister made chili for Christmas. It was really good.
That sounds really good. And I grew up every single Christmas eating like the Thanksgiving meal on Christmas. Like, that's just what my family did. And in my mind, anything else was kind of sacrilegious. But then Jeremy's parents do lobster and steak.
Surf and turf.
And it is a wonderful tradition. And so it has completely opened my eyes to the possibilities of what Christmas Day food can be.
I could totally get behind some of that.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a blast. Ooh. And also, like, eating a lobster tail. Do you know how special and fancy you feel? You do that once a year. Like, it is. Yeah,
a funny little plastic bib.
Yeah, over top of like your kind of cute outfit, and then you get like your hands all buttery. I love the experience.
It's a whole thing. Well, that's great. Listeners, we hope that, again, you have been staying healthy and happy and either seeing your family in person or over Zoom or however you are managing right now. But 2021 is almost done. Does anyone know what that means? I don't know. Time is not real. However, there was an Olympic Games this year. There was a return to in-person road racing this year. There was cross country, and the trails were hot. There was all kinds of excitement that happened in this very weird year. And we are here to bring you our Maddie and Kate Shakeout Podcast with some audience input recap of the year that was. And we're going to focus on just the Canadians, because that's what we do. We are Canadian Running Magazine. There were some extraordinary performances by our Canucks throughout the year. So we're going to break it down for you. We've got our top moments from the track, from the roads, from the cross-country courses, and finally from the trails. And to kick it all off, we're going to start with our favorite, because it's what we do, the track. Okay, do you want to kick us off, Maddie?
Yes. So obviously, these are our favorite moments. And we wanted to sort of peel the curtain back and let you in on some of the behind the scenes of what went on to make these performances happen. So our favorite moments are not necessarily like, you know, the most widely known or the most televised or publicized or obviously massive accomplishments. They were massive accomplishments for these people, but not necessarily, you know, Olympic gold medalists. With that said, we do need to give a huge shout out to Damian Warner and Andre DeGrasse, our Olympic gold medalists. Damian won Olympic gold in decathlon and with a new Canadian record and a new Olympic record, and is only the fourth person in history to break 9,000 points. And as we know, Andre DeGrasse won the 100 meter. And so we would be remiss to not mention those performances.
But we've got, like you said, Maddie, a whole bunch of other moments, some of which were, you know, again, widely covered, some of which weren't. And just for the record, we're going to go in no particular order. So these are not, you know, there's no sort of assignment to the order that we go in here in terms of how special we thought they were. They're all special. But sticking with Tokyo, because obviously so much of what happened that was thrilling on the track this year happened at these games or to get there. And we're going to kick it off with a pretty obvious one, which is Mr. Mo Ahmed winning Olympic silver in the 5,000 meter. And I should just mention, we did put a call out on social media for our audience to send in their favorite moments. And this was one that many of our write-ins agreed with. So this was the first Olympic 5,000 meter medal in Canadian history. Mo made history in 2019 by winning the first world championship medal at those games in the 5,000 meter, coming third, winning the bronze medal. But he polished that up a level to silver at these Olympic Games. This was such a thrilling race, Maddie. We're going to go back even further, actually, before we talk about the race. In Rio at the last Olympics, which you'll remember was 5 years ago now, Mo went in saying that he wanted a medal, kicking for a medal. He did everything possible in that 5,000 meter, and he came up a heartbreaking fourth. And I say heartbreaking because, again, we'll embed links to all of the videos that we reference in in the show notes for this episode. But if you go back and watch Mo crossing the line in Rio in that fourth place finish, he is just devastated. Fourth at the Olympic Games is a remarkable result, but Mo wanted a medal so badly, and to come that close and not get it was a real, you know, letdown for him. So to come out of the gate at these Olympics, he was in, I think, about seventh place going into the bell lap. He was actually gapped a little bit. And this is why track and field is so thrilling. And this is why it is worth watching every step of a 5,000 meter, because he was in it. He really kept himself in the race, but with a lap to go, he had just gapped, like the field had gapped him just a little bit. And down the backstretch, he made this big move. He put himself back in contention. And then Maddie, for me, it was the last 100 meters, because coming off the final corner, he was in fifth and he stuck to the rail, which is a really smart but sometimes dangerous move because you don't always know if a gap is going to open up for you. But he's such an experienced runner. He knew the leg speed he had. He knew the tactics of the other racers around him. This little gap opened up on the inside, and he just snuck his way up to that silver medal position, breaking up the gold and bronze of the Ugandans. It was so thrilling, and you could see the excitement on his face when he crossed that line.
It also just paints the picture of like how long it takes you to move up those two spots. Like, it's 5 years for Mo to go from fourth to second. Like, that is how painstakingly close it is at the top, and that is how perfect your execution needs to be. And so, yeah, it is just so cool to watch all those things come together for a person on that one day, and especially to like watch it live was truly incredible.
And because we're talking about the 5,000 meter, we should throw an honorable mention out to Mo's compatriot, Justin Knight, who also made that final and finished seventh in incredible fashion. That is such an impressive performance. At his first Olympic Games, what an outstanding finish, and only good things for this duo moving forward.
Another person that, truthfully, I was adamant was on this list is Jen Lalonde, because she had a really, really difficult 2020-2021. Not that we all didn't, but Jen sustained a serious injury that took her out for months. She relocated, under complicated circumstances. And then it took her a long time to heal and get back into running. So Jen tore her glute med in early 2021 in a freak accident on a run. It took her months to come back. She had only the space of a few months to get herself in shape. She managed to get herself into the shape of her life to the point that she ran a Canadian record in the semifinal and then again in the final at the Olympics. And I shared an apartment with her, and she was so nervous the day of her semifinal. And then to watch someone go from being so nervous to pulling, like, just completely, like, tightened it up, pulled it together, had the race of her life. It was just so cool to watch. Like, Jen is a consummate professional, and she's incredibly good under pressure. And, like, honestly, I would want her on a desert island. So big, big shout out to Jen Lalonde. That Olympic final was absolutely a moment of the year.
100%. Another favorite moment, sticking with the women, was the women's 4x400 meter relay team. So these gals came fourth overall, but the real story here is that they weren't even supposed to make the final. Maddie Price, Alicia Brown, Kyra Constantine, and Sage Watson, all extraordinary runners in their own right.
So you have younger runners like Kyra Constantine, an NCAA standout, and then you have...
And Maddie Price, another NCAA standout.
100%. And then you have Alicia Brown, who has now retired from the sport, but Alicia has been in the sport a long time, and she has gone through some really, really tough stuff when it comes to running, and she clawed her way back to make the 2016 Olympics. She ran Olympic standard and finished top three on the final day to qualify. Like, she had like two huge things she needed to do, and she ticked both boxes in 2016. And I was about to run the 800 heats, and I remember crying in the tent after watching her qualify for Rio. And then she came back 5 years later to do it again in 2021. So Alicia is on her way out of the sport. Kyra's on her way in. And they didn't select who would run on this relay team until a few days before they left our training camp.
And again, all great runners in their own right. But on paper, this was not, no one pegged this team to be a medal contender. I mean, even they didn't peg themselves to be a medal contender. This was meant to be, you know, a team that was going to gain some experience at these games so that they could really be strong medal-wise in the future. This team dominated in their heats. They ran so well. They qualified for the final, which again was a surprise. And then a little backstory here is that basically, for those who don't know, there's no set order going into a final. You can determine who you want to put where. It's not based on the order that they had in the heats. And head coach of Athletics Canada, Glenn Roy Gilbert, had an order in his mind that he thought the runner should go in. And the day before the race, they came to him as a team and said, Glenn Roy, we think we should change the order because we think it gives us a better chance of winning a medal. And Glenn Roy said, you know what, ladies? Go for it. Because again, there was really not a big expectation here that these gals were going to be anywhere near a medal. And they said, we think it's going to put us in the best position possible. And he said, go for it. And so they switched up their order the day before the final and came within spitting distance of a bronze medal as a result. In fact, they were in third going into the anchor leg, which was Sage Watson. Sage ran a brilliant race. She held on the best she could. Frankly, she was just up against better runners on the day. But for this team to come fourth and be that close to a bronze was truly special. And it was really, really fun to see. Watch out for these ladies heading into next summer's World Championships.
Another steeple person who just blew this season out of the water is John Gay. So John has been a strong runner for a number of years, but he really broke out in 2019. He made the World Championships, his first senior team on the track. And in 2021, he just built on that success. He qualified for the Olympics. He ran standard for the Olympics at Nationals just 4 days before the qualifying window closed. He was originally on that day supposed to race in Sweden. But at the airport in Montreal, he said, something doesn't feel right. I'm not going, which is, from the outside, wackadoodle logic. However, you got to trust your gut in this sport. And he did. He ran nationals completely solo, ran just under Olympic standard, was such a cool thing to watch. And then at the games, he PBs in the semifinal to make the final and ran so well in the final to PB again. And after that race, he walks up to Glenroy Gilbert, who is, like Kate said, the head coach of the Olympic team, and kind of yelled at him, "Performance on demand," because that was the whole motto for the whole games. And it was just so funny and true. And I was just, it was so cool to see John's entire season, which was, you know, obviously a huge breakthrough for him. But in classic John Gay fashion, he brought so many people with him along the way. Like, I'm just going to mention Luke Bruchet here too, while we're on the topic, because Luke Bruchet, from the outside, no one thought that guy was making the Olympics. And then he ran a new PB. He ran under the Olympic standard at Harry Jerome just a few weeks before the qualifying window closed. And I think only his second 5,000 of the season.
Yeah, and just for reference there, he ran 13:12, which was only 2 seconds under the Olympic standard, but was a 12-second personal best, and his old PB dated back to 2016. So this was an incredible race.
And John Gay paced him for 4K. And, like, you know, no, he made it a workout, but, like, no real personal gain there. It was just the right thing to do for his buddy who needed to run a time and thought he could. And yeah, just, you know, class act of a person and such a cool experience to have. And also was sort of made like a de facto male captain by the time we got to Japan. Like, I think everyone just realized, like, oh, this is one of the nicest people we've ever met. Like, he was asked to give an impromptu speech to the Japanese people who were hosting us. Anyway, just, you know, John Gay, rave reviews. Final moment from my side is, and, you know, I am, of course, a little biased here as dear friends and former training partners, but the Stafford sisters. And I will start with Lucia, because Lucia did not, she opened her season with a real bang in January. She ran a very impressive indoor time, mostly solo. I got her through a kilometer, and then she was the only person on the track for the last 500 meters. And honestly, struggled a little bit after that. She continued to run just shy of Olympic standard over and over again. She did not qualify with Olympic standard. She qualified on points. You know, I think I can be frank in saying she was feeling a little burnt out by the time we got to the Olympics. And me, oh my, did she pull it together, because Lou ran back-to-back, like, stunning, fearless races. And it is, she's one of my favorite people to watch run, because Lucia is 22 years old and she is totally scrappy and will stand in a line next to anyone. And if her head's in the right place, she will say, "I can beat you." And so Lucia ran a PB in the quarterfinals of 4:03 to qualify for the semifinals. She was ecstatic, over the moon, so happy. Went into the semifinals, did even better, ran a 4:02 low, one of the fastest times in Canadian history, was with Safwan Hassan with 200 meters to go and passed her. Like, me watching 22-year-old Lucia Stafford look at Safwan Hassan and go, "You're not going fast enough." Real highlight for me. And she finished 13th overall in the end, one spot out of the final, the fastest ever non-qualifier for an Olympic 1500 final. And she is 22 years old. And the best part is, she calls me right after the final. And, you know, that a different person might say, like, "Oh, I was the fastest non-qualifier. Man, I wish I was in that final." But instead she said, "Honestly, Maddie, best case scenario, because now I can watch my sister run." And that is who she is. And then on to big sister Gabriella, who ran she ran three solid rounds. She, you know, led her quarter from gun to tape, basically. And I think she ran 3:59, 3:58, 3:58, I think. Within 4 days of each other. 4 days. She executed so well. In the end, she finished fifth. You know, I know there was a possibility of a medal, but sixth at the World Championships 2 years earlier, fifth at the Olympics. Like we saw with Mo, it took him 5 years to hop two places. Like, you know, Gabriella is among the best in the world. And it was so cool to see those two thriving, you know, same place, same time. I was just so proud of both of them.
Well, since we're talking about our training partners, I'll bring mine in at this point, which of course is Andrea Sakafian. We've talked about her a lot on the show. Again, folks, we'll link this in the show notes, but you can go back and listen. We've done individual interviews with almost all of the people we're talking about. So if you want to learn more about their backstory or about their performances, you can check out all of those episodes at runningmagazine.ca or on your favorite podcatcher. But Andrea Sakafian, her performances in Tokyo were fantastic. She doubled in the 5,000 and 10,000. She made the final in the 5,000, the only Canadian woman of the three of us to do so. But for me, the standout of the year was how she got to these Olympic Games. And that's going to take us back to the Sound Running Meet in California in May, where she ran the Olympic standard in the 10,000 meter. This was just one of the performances of my lifetime as a spectator. I was there in person. You can, again, watch the video. It is just like the grittiest, most determined effort I've ever seen. So Olympic standard was 31:25. Going into this race, Andrea had run 31:45 from earlier in the year. So, you know, 20 seconds off, which is a significant amount, but not insurmountable. The Canadian record going in was 31:41, which was set by Natasha Wodak. So she knew, Andrea knew going in that she had some work to do. This was also because there's so few 10,000 meter races available throughout the year that are of a high quality in good conditions. This was one of the very few and very last opportunities for her to qualify. Throw COVID into the mix. Why not? This was, you know, Sound Running did a great job of putting on a meet in really difficult circumstances. But because of COVID, there were several hiccups. For instance, there was not a pacer in this race until the day of the race. Andrea didn't think that there was going to be a rabbit. Kudos to the Sound Running folks. They found someone to take the group through, but the pacer was only able to go less than 2 kilometers of a 10K race, which of course is not very much. Another runner then took over the lead for about another 2K, but Andrea at that point knew that the pace was going too slow. And so from 4K onward, that's 6K of a race, she led for all but 2 laps. And she was just a metronome. And not only that, but with 800 meters to go, with 2 laps to go, she started picking it up. And her last 2 laps were 68 and 67 seconds, respectively, in a 10,000 meter running solo. She ended up crushing Olympic standard. She ran 31:13, huge personal best, huge Canadian record. And again, it was just out of sheer determination that she was able to do this. Again, my favorite moment from the year was her crossing the line. I was able to run over to her, and the first words out of her mouth with her eyes wide as saucers was, "Is this real life?" And I said, "Yes, Andrea, this is real life. You just qualified for the Olympics." It was a thrilling moment. Again, one of the performances of the year for me. Of course, almost as soon as the Olympic Games ended, the Paralympic Games began, and we had a whole slew of dominant performances there as well. For me, Maddie, the performance on the track from the Paralympics on the Canadian side was Mr. Nate Reach, the king of the 1500 meter. In the last year, he has broken the world record for the 1500 meter 3 times. He did not do this in the Paralympic Games. However, he completely controlled this race and ended up winning in completely dominant fashion. This was his first Paralympic Games, and to come away with a huge win like this was just so fun to see. There were a few performances this year, Maddie, where I would say the like immediate cross the line celebration was just as thrilling as the race itself. And Nate is up there for me for sure. Evan Dunphy is another one who just let out this huge roar when he crossed the line. But go check out the photos and the video of Nate Reach crossing the 1500 meter line at the Paralympic Games, because it's so thrilling. And you just see all the excitement come out. So congratulations, Nate, on your incredible race at the Paralympics. The last two that we want to mention are not Olympic moments, but they are incredibly impressive nonetheless. The first is Marco Arop, who, thank you, Marco, taught me how to pronounce his last name correctly. Again, you can go back and listen to the interview that I did with him earlier this fall. But Marco had some real disappointment at the Olympics. He was pegged as a medal favorite going in. He had placed third at the Monaco Diamond League earlier in the year, running a personal best of 143.26. We don't always include the hundredths of a second in our results, but part of the reason I'm doing that is because he was 0.05 of a second off of the Canadian record in that performance. So that just shows how fast he is. Unfortunately, he did not make the final. He won his heat. He looked fantastic. He led it the whole way, but faded in the semifinal, didn't make the final, came out of those games with a lot of disappointment, but completely turned it around in the Diamond Leagues that followed. He ended up winning the Prefontaine Classic in Eugene, Oregon, and then followed that up with another win in Lausanne. Winning two Diamond Leagues in the 800 is remarkable. He podiumed in every Diamond League race that he competed in this summer, and he ended up placing second in the Diamond League final. So just a remarkable set of performances from Marco. Unfortunately, the Olympics, a bit disappointing, but he redeemed himself well. And the final piece of track dominance that we want to bring you from this year was the Masters runner extraordinaire Carla Del Grand set a W65 world record in the 300 meter hurdles. She set the Canadian record last year of 57.40, and in August she dropped that time down to 54 seconds flat to set the world record. And just a little tidbit here, Carla's been running hurdles for less than 2 years. She holds multiple Canadian and world records in other events ranging from the 60 meter up to the 400. But, you know, she got bored with just running flat races, decided to take up the hurdles in her mid-60s and set a world record. Congratulations, Carla.
Alrighty, moving on to the roads, we have Melindy Elmore and Natasha Wodak in the Tokyo Marathon, placed 9th and 13th respectively in insane conditions. It was the best Olympic marathon finished by a Canadian woman in a non-boycott games for Melindy, and also, I believe, the first time ever we sent a full roster of women to the marathon at the Olympics. So it's been a wildly exciting few years for the women on the roads. You know, Melindy has completely raised the bar, and then Natasha saw the raised bar and said, I like high bars. And then a bunch of other people have followed, and I cannot wait to see what this group of women and the women on the come up right now do over the next 5-10 years. Because actually, you know, we have people now like Brandon McDougall running a debut solo marathon in 2:33 at 23 years old. It was the Muskoka Marathon in October. Last year, she won the Muskoka Half in 1:11, setting the U23 Canadian record along the way. And it is performances like Melindy's and Natasha's that make the brandness of the world go, 2:33 is not a problem for me.
Since we're talking about women in the marathon, we should also mention Lanny Marchant's incredible comeback this year. She was the top placing Canadian woman in the New York City Marathon. Huge return to fitness and to performance by Lanny. So she ran 2:32 at the New York City Marathon. She was 11th overall. Again, an incredible comeback. The last marathon she ran was in 2016. Also at New York City, actually, following her double that year at the Olympic Games. But it's been a rough road for Lanny. Again, we did a great chat with her just a couple of weeks ago, so you can check that out on our website. But Lanny, you know, to come back in New York, and then only 5 weeks after that race, she went and ran the Honolulu Marathon, which she won. So just a really great set of results from Lanny this fall. And, you know, she said she did it on very little training. So exciting to see what she can do in the new year off of even more training and preparation. And our final Canadian female marathoner that we'll talk about is Leslie Sexton, who won the Philadelphia Marathon. This was another popular write-in from our audience in terms of performance of the year. Leslie won the Philly Marathon in a huge personal best and course record. She ran 2:28.34, which is almost a full minute under the World Championship Marathon standard. This was just such a great breakthrough for Leslie. She's been on a tear this year. She's been dominant in events ranging from the 5K all the way up to the marathon. Again, we had a great chat with her earlier this fall. Check it out on our website.
On the men's side, we have Evan Dunphy's Tokyo bronze in the 50K race walk, which was thrilling to watch. It was a huge final kilometer to put him back in medal contention after falling off several times throughout the race. And this third place finish comes 5 years after a heartbreaking fourth in Rio, where he had a controversy with a Japanese race walker. And again, just like Mo, just like Gabriella, we're talking years of work for one place different at the top end and over 50 kilometers. So congratulations, Evan, who's also now getting into politics. So, you know, big year for Mr. Evan Dunphy.
That's right. We mentioned this really briefly at the end of our last rundown, but he has announced his bid to run for city council in his hometown of Richmond, BC, in 2022. So keep your eyes and ears peeled as we bring you all of the updates from Evan's campaign trail. Our final piece, our final road moment of the year is actually three moments. It is Mr. Ben Flanagan, who had three back-to-back wins at major road races starting in August at the Falmouth 7-miler. This is a very prestigious American and very prestigious and historic American race. This was the second time he won the race. He won it the first time back in 2018, but to win this, I mean, this is a kind of race that has, it's attended by several top American and international runners. So he beat an incredible field there. He went on 2 months later to win the Canadian 10K Road Championships in Toronto and then capped off his road racing season by winning the Manchester Road Race, which is actually in Manchester, Connecticut. It's held on American Thanksgiving. Again, a very historic and prestigious race. And so for him to have this triple victory, this triple crown, super impressive. He missed the Olympics this summer, which was a big disappointment, but found great redemption over the last several months. So keep your eyes out for Ben Flanagan moving into 2022.
Moving on to the cross-country course, we have to start with Kaylee McCabe, who was third at this year's NCAA cross-country championship. She competes for West Virginia. She calls Vancouver home, and she ran the U23 3,000 meter indoor record this year already of 8:53. And there are going to be great things coming for this young woman. We say all the time that NCAA cross-country might be one of the deepest races in the world, like in terms of, you know, just like that age group.
I've said it before. I competed in two junior world cross country championships, world cross country, and then went on to the NCAA. And the NCAA was, in my opinion, far deeper and far harder than either of those world junior races. So pretty remarkable.
So congrats to Kaylee on one of our moment of the years. And we cannot wait to see what you do.
We already mentioned her on the track, but we got to give a quick shout out to Ms. Jen Lalonde, who won AC cross country for the third consecutive year. We say it all the time, but steeplechasers do very, very well on the cross country course. And Jen is just the cross country queen to win 3 years in a row, again, against pretty deep fields, truly extraordinary. You know, other runners put the gears to her, but just couldn't hold on. Jen is dominant on the cross country course.
Speaking of U Sport dominance, Mitch Ubeen's performance at this year's U Sports cross country was a total highlight. It was a come from behind win after a tumultuous couple years of a coach firing, a coaching change, another coaching change, sort of a program overhaul. And he was still super, super successful, you know, despite all that plus a pandemic. So a huge congratulations to Mitch Ubeen for the year that he's had, and, you know, things are looking good for Mitch, and we hope that he can continue this into the U Sports season and the outdoor track season. On the women's side, Laval, I feel like Laval has sort of been a bridesmaid at U Sports cross country for a very long time, and they were very much the bride on the plains. They won at home. They had such a dominant performance, finishing first, third, fourth, ninth, and 18th for a grand total score of, what does that make it? 35 was their point accumulation over their top five runners, which is so impressive. Jesse LaCourse won the race outright, just took off from the gun and helped her team to the title. So congratulations to Laval. You guys were truly, truly impressive.
Finally, our moments from the trails. The trails were an interesting place to be this year. Of course, trail running sort of naturally lends itself to being one of the most COVID-proof events, I would say, in that it, you know, they, these events take place in the depths of the wilderness often, and you know, social distancing is not generally a huge issue. But of course, it was not impervious to all of the issues that have all of the restrictions that happened throughout the world this year at major events. So we had a mixture of in-person and virtual running, but one of the standout performances of the year was a virtual event. This is the Great Race Across Tennessee, which this year became, for the second year in a row, the Great Virtual Race Across Tennessee. And for the second year in a row, this event was won by a Canadian. This year, it was won by Varden Morris of Vancouver. He was 148th last year, Maddie. This year, he was the king. He was the champion. He covered the 1,000 kilometer distance in less than 10 days. He did it in 9 days, 23 hours, averaging more than 100 kilometers a day. He said that he was in total disbelief. He knew he came in wanting to do something big, but this was sort of, I think it just blew his own expectations out of the water. Hopefully we get back to in-person Great Race Across Tennessee events in the years to come. And I'm sure we'll see Varden Morris out there. Way to go.
Or in our next outstanding moment, Victoria Brown set a new Canadian 100-mile record of 15 hours, 24 minutes, and 45 seconds. It was run on a track at the Desert Solstice Track Invitational in Arizona earlier this month. She also broke the Canadian 48 and 72-hour records in July, as well as the Canadian W45 100-mile record in May. And Victoria is relatively new to trail running. She's only been doing it for a couple years. And, you know, with dominance like this, it would be super exciting to see her get into some longer stuff off track and on the trail and what could happen there, you know, maybe even a UTMB or something like that. So congratulations to Victoria on the incredible year you've had.
And the one little caveat we'll put in here is that this category is actually trail slash ultra, because several of these records that she set were actually, as you mentioned, on a track. So the 100-mile record at Desert Solstice, I cannot imagine running 100 miles on a track, but to each their own. And then those 48 and 72-hour records were part of the 6 Days in the Dome, which is an event that many people will be familiar with. So again, not trail, but definitely ultra, definitely impressive. And like you said, Maddie, probably a huge future for this woman on the trails as well. Another extraordinary result from the trails this year was Montreal's Mathieu Blanchard finishing third at UTMB. Of course, Ultra Trail du Mont Blanc is one of the most prestigious trail races in the world. This was an incredible performance by the Canadian. He finished third in a personal best time of 21 hours and 12 minutes. That's 2.5 hours faster than his time in 2018. With this performance, Blanchard had the highest finish by a Canadian at UTMB, and it was just a really stunning performance. So way to go, Mathieu. Another trail moment of the year was the fact that the Bruce Trail FKT was shattered this year, the overall FKT. So that's not just men's, not just women's, but Karen Holland of Kimberley, Ontario, has run the fastest ever completion of this trail. It's a historic trail. It's absolutely beautiful. It's been broken 3 times this year, including by Karen Holland. She is the first person to complete this trail in under 9 days. It's a 900 kilometer trail. Obviously, that means 100 kilometers a day. She did it in 8 days, 22 hours, and 51 minutes. That was more than 4 hours faster than the previous FKT and more than 3 full days faster than the previous women's FKT on this trail. So extraordinary performance by Karen Holland. Again, we had a great chat with her earlier this year. We'll link it in the show notes. Go take a listen and get out there on the trails yourselves, folks. It's a great way to run safe during COVID and challenge yourself in ways you might not have before.
Kate, before we go, your favorite running moment of the year, personally?
My favorite running moment of the year for myself personally, it's a pretty obvious one, but it was my personal best and Olympic standard setting performance at Sound Running in the 5,000 meter, where I broke 15 minutes for the first time, partly because it was a personal best, a really big one, and also an Olympic standard. And those things in themselves are really exciting. But it was also a race in which Julianne Staley ran 15:01 and was right with me. It was a meet in which the night before I got to watch Andrea run the 10,000 and do all the amazing things that she did in that race. I got to see you race there. So I think it's like the memory is made all the more special by all the things that happened around my performance. But in terms of, yes, a memory of the year that I enjoyed most, it's got to be that 5,000. How about you?
The Olympic race day. Nothing. The whole, I didn't run Olympic standard, which makes the whole process extremely nerve-wracking because it's largely out of your control. And, you know, I was in quarantine watching people hop me on the list, and even, you know, the day I qualified wasn't particularly enjoyable. I just found like my whole Olympic lead up was just like riddled with stress. But then by the time I got there, I loved it. I absolutely loved race day. And the second one, which is kind of Olympic adjacent, but it sticks out in my mind, was walking across the Buffalo Bridge with Lucia after a red eye flight coming back home with our suitcases, you know, and it was like a stunning May day. Like it was just like 20 degrees and like perfect blue skies. And we were so excited to be home. And I don't know, I will never walk across the American border again with all my stuff and explain that I've been gone during a pandemic because I'm trying to qualify for the Olympics. And, you know, those two moments were real. This is what you're doing is very cool.
That's a good one, Maddie. Yes, hopefully you will never be in a situation where you have to walk across an international border in a pandemic and Olympic year again. I think the chances of those things all happening at once is pretty slim, but wilder things have happened. Well, folks, it's been a fantastic year. Thank you all for contributing your write-ins to your favorite moments of the year, most underrated, underappreciated sort of comeback stories. They've all been really fun to read. Hopefully we've done them justice in this episode. And for all those listening, we want to thank you for another year of listening to the Shakeout podcast and the Rundown. We love bringing you these episodes. And we hope that you have had an exciting year of running yourselves. Stay healthy, stay safe, and we can't wait to run with you into 2022. For the last time in 2021, for the Rundown, I'm Kate.
And I'm Maddie.
We'll chat again soon.